Lots of us have limitations of all kinds, but we can all do something. So find out what that thing is and do that. Walk in the light that God gives you.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of UB Now. My name's Brian. I'm the host of the show and I'm the communications director for the United Brethren in Christ Church. Today, I'm talking to Jim Bullock, Pastor Jim Bullock, and we're going to get into some fun conversations about his role at his church and his role in the denomination as we tell stories about what's happening in our denomination right now. So Jim, welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thanks, Brian.
Yeah, you've been, just a little bit of background info on you. You are the director of ministerial licensing for the denomination. You've been in that role, I believe you said, since 2017. And you've been at your current church at Mount Pleasant since 2018.
2018.
And then at Prince Street prior to that. For how long did you say?
16 years prior to that.
16 years. So you've been around the denomination a long time. Were you somewhere else prior to Prince Street?
I was at Mongol Church, and then before that, I was at the Atlantic Avenue Church in Franklin.
Okay. So you've got a long, rich history with the United Brethren Church.
That's wealth a nice of knowledge way of calling about, me old, Brian.
A wealth of knowledge about who we are as a denomination. So these are things, Jim, that I am learning. I've been with the denomination since 2003, serving as a youth pastor in Fort Wayne, and then remained a licensed pastor, but I was serving with Youth for Christ for a number of years. And so it's good for me to be back and kind of reestablish some connections and make some new ones and learn more from those who have been around longer and more invested than I was even when I was here in the early 2000s. So these have been fun conversations. I'm looking forward to chatting with you. My first question, though, is what is it like working this long with Bobby Kohler?
It is a blessing.
Yeah? Okay, absolutely. That's a good answer.
Before I arrived at Mount Pleasant, anytime a youth pastor would ask me for advice, I served in youth ministry for a few years. I've learned a few things, but Bobby's forgotten more than most people have ever known when it comes to youth ministry.
Yeah.
And since Bill Blue stepped out of youth ministry, Bobby's sort of the authority in United Brethren Youth Ministry. And coming here has been an absolute joy because Bobby is a partner in ministry, and he's not just the youth pastor who goes and does his own thing. He is invested fully in the full ministry of the church, and I'm a team guy, so it is a blessing to have Bobby on the team.
Number one, I love your answer. Number two, I totally didn't expect it. You know, I love ribbing Bobby a little bit, so I was expecting a little something, but no, I really love your answer. I respect Bobby a ton. He was serving on the youth ministry leadership team, I think, when I even started back in the early 2000s, and so I really respect his voice in the youth ministry world and especially in the denomination. So, yeah, appreciate that. Not here to talk necessarily about Bobby, but I'm glad that he's a good partner for you there. I actually had a conversation with him earlier today talking about the ministry leader summits that are coming up, so you'll start seeing more information about those as well. Maybe you already have by the time this airs, so looking forward to that. But Jim, I want to just talk to you about a couple things today. This podcast is about telling stories of what's happening right now in our United Brethren churches around the country. And you have some unique things going on, or a unique thing going on, at least in the pastoral ministry development world. You have a two-year pastoral residency that I believe just wrapped up with your first resident. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and tell us a little bit about what that looks like.
Well, the journey began when Gary Culler decided finally to retire, and that opened a position on our staff. And as our leadership team and I prayed and talked together, this church has a commitment to raising up the next generation of pastors and global workers and Christian leaders. Mm-hmm. And coming out of that came a discussion of what does that look like? What can we do to pour into the next generation? And that's where the idea of a pastoral residency came from. We see it as a win-win-win. We win because we get a young minister on staff. And because the rest of the pastoral staff here is 50 plus. So we get a young minister on staff. That minister wins because they get broad experience across the full range of pastoral ministry and individual mentoring in a really healthy congregation setting. The people of Mount Pleasant Church are tremendous. And so it's a win for that individual. And we also see it as a win for the kingdom of God, because at the end of 2 years, we're going to send that person out somewhere. We love it when we would love it for that to be in the United Brethren Church, like Colin Rabb heading to Zanesville. But, you know, if God brings them through Mount Pleasant to prepare them for somewhere else, last I checked, the kingdom is the kingdom. And it's not it's not up to me to decide where God puts people. So
yeah,
it's a kingdom-minded approach, and so that's how we see it.
Yeah, no, I think that's I really appreciate that. I think it's it can be a difficult thing, right? When you raise up someone as a leader that's so good that you want to hang on to, that you have a place in your church potentially for, but to have that mindset from the get-go that we're raising someone up to send someone out. What was that like? I know you mentioned Colin came on. This was your first round of this pastoral residency. What did that look like for him as far as his schedule and his rotation? You kind of mentioned from quarter to quarter he was doing some different things. What does that like the day to day look like?
The residency set up to have each quarter we focus on a different capacity in pastoral ministry. We start with pastoral care, relationships. I remember when I was getting started in ministry, Gary Small at the Atlantic Avenue Church sat me down and he says, "Jim, I'm going to tell you something that's going to be an important lesson for you. Ministry is all about people. It's going to seem like it's about programs. It's going to seem like it's about doing all kinds of things and structures and all that, but at the end of the day, it's all about people. And so more than anything, we want to train pastors to be pastors, to really care for and love people well. So it starts there. Ours is designed to be a missional perspective and kingdom dynamic there. We think that in the future, most of the work of ministry is going to happen outside the walls of the church. And so we want to equip young ministers to be comfortable working outside the walls of the church. Colin found a great spot on pickleball courts. Our current resident, Heath Lewis, is going to be working with the Franklin County Literacy Council. So learning how to engage in community is the next step. And then from there, how do you make disciples? I figure anybody can learn how to run a program. But learning how to make disciples, that can be a tricky thing. And so we want pastors to leave here knowing how to love people well, knowing how to engage in the community, knowing how to truly make disciples, not just churchgoers. And then all through the process, there's preaching every month, and two different times throughout the course of the residency, he does a 3 to 5 week series.
Okay.
So there's a lot of preaching because, you know, we want to make sure that these people coming out of here know how to preach the word well as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of a pretty important role of a pastor in most of our churches today, right?
It is.
I love the fact that you mentioned we want them to know how to make disciples. Anybody can build a program, but it's maybe a little more difficult to make disciples, which feels a little bit more biblical to me, learning how to make disciples. I think Jesus said something about that. Yeah.
So, and I've heard someone say, I forget who I heard it from first. If you try to grow the church, you might make disciples. But if you make disciples, you'll always end up with the church. And I can't agree more.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to argue with that one.
Yeah.
Hard to argue with that one for sure. So Colin just finished up. You mentioned you have a second resident now. How long has that been going on?
Heath joined us in mid-September.
Okay. So yeah. Fairly recently. That's yes. That's cool. What did you learn the first round that maybe has changed or that you're tweaking for the second round?
The biggest thing I've learned is to be a good listener. I was amazed how much I learned from Colin by listening to him. So I wasn't anticipating that so much going into these residencies. I thought it would be a lot more of me pouring into, but with Colin, it turned out to be very much of a team, very much of a colleague kind of situation. And I learned from him a great deal as well. Now, Heath is a completely different personality type than Colin. And yet, I'm still learning from him. He brings a completely different perspective. You know, as I shared, Colin found his place on the pickleball court. Heath is finding his place in community in the literacy council. Those are two very different elements.
Yeah.
So they're very different people. But learning from them, learning to listen, has been something that I've learned.
Yeah. Is this something that, I love having pastors on telling these stories of what's going on in their churches. Because I think when we share stories of what's happening in our real lives, in our churches, that it can inspire others to who are considering, what does it look like to raise up leaders in my church? What does it look like to develop young people who make disciples in my church? And to hear someone who has a structure in place, who has been doing this for a while, who has a church that's extremely supportive and on board with raising up leaders to send out leaders, I think can be really inspiring to others. So I'm curious, I know this is something that you and I have had conversations offline about, this pastoral residency. This, do you have a bigger vision for this than beyond Mount Pleasant? Is this something that you'd like to see develop potentially in other places that could be, is this something that could be replicated from what you're doing, or does this feel like uniquely Mount Pleasant right now?
I think that something like this could be done anywhere where there's a pastor in a congregation who genuinely wants to raise up the next generation. We're in a position right now that, we can afford to compensate this position. But I don't know that that's necessary. I know that currently there are an awful lot of wonderful pastors who are co-vocational.
Right.
And I think that in the future, the need for co-vocational pastors is going to grow. And so I don't see any reason why compensation necessarily would be a determining factor. If you've got a pastor and a pastor in a congregation that wants to invest in the next generation, well, that individual could earn their living doing something else, and also serve the church. It doesn't have to be a full-time position. You can modify this however. So I would love to see that. I'd love to see people investing. I had the blessing of people investing in me. Gary Small, Rick Fischel, they poured into me week after week, year after year. And I want to be able to do that for others.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that we have been talking about in our local church at Living Grace, is what would it look like for us if we could manage to do something like that. I'm sure there are whispers of things like this happening in other churches. And I just hope that maybe there's some connections that can be made to help support that. And maybe as people hear what's happening, that they can say, hey, I'd like to talk to Pastor Jim. How did you do that? How did you get that started? So hopefully this opens up some doors to some conversation a little bit in that regard. I've heard you say a couple times too, and I think I'm on the same page with you about, in the future, ministry happening outside the walls of the church. And that more and more pastors potentially becoming co-vocational, almost back to the tent maker model. You know, we read about Paul traveling around and earning his keep and earning his living. And, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that. Like, what, where's that sense come from, and where do you see it going, you know, from here? How soon do you think we'll see pastors kind of moving from in-church ministries to not necessarily in-church to outside the church, but with a focus on ministry with people in communities outside of the walls of the church?
The practical reality is that the majority of a population now gathers outside the walls of a church. And there's very little a church can do to draw people inside the walls if they don't really want to be there.
Yeah.
So that means that if we're going to be where people are, we have to move outside the walls of the church. And I think that as time progresses, that's going to be more and more important. I think that an attractional model of ministry is going to become less and less effective over time. And a relational model of ministry is going to be more and more important. When it comes to timelines, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, whether or not it goes all the way, it goes back to tent making. I just was recently reading biographies of United Brethren bishops back into the 1800s. And so many of them were farmers. That they managed their farm, and they pastored their church, and they served as district elders, and they did this, and they did that, and they did another thing. And I think that multitasking, that multi-role kind of thing, I think that's going to become more and more prevalent as the years roll forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think just a little bit of my recent background, my recent story, was a little bit of that. I was serving, as I mentioned, at Emmanuel Community Church in Fort Wayne for a number of years, and then I served with Youth for Christ in Fort Wayne for about 11 years after that. And then I moved into podcast production, which is far outside of what I think of traditional ministry being, but I did so because I was doing podcasts. I was starting to create video content, and it was developing these relationships with people outside of the church, some online, some locally, that were just asking questions about the stuff I was doing that allowed me to build relationships with people that I would otherwise have never known existed, or much less had an intense conversation with, that would turn to spiritual conversations faster than I ever anticipated. And so to see what I was doing as a ministry was really valuable to me, and it helped me understand, you know, what does it look like to do ministry in a different way while I'm earning a living doing something else, but really seeing that as an opportunity to invest in the lives of people and to make disciples in that regard. So I do think not everybody's going to follow that path, but now I'm back here doing this. But I do think there is an opportunity to do that. And I've seen fruit from that, not just in my relationships, but in those that are doing ministry in the church, but really have a focus on the community outside. So timeline. Yeah, I wish we could. Don't we always wish we could put a timeline on things?
Yes.
All we can
I'm
do
not
is
that wise.
Yeah, all we can do is prepare if that's what we sense the Spirit's leading us towards. And so, love what you're doing there. What are some other? I know you're the director of ministerial licensing and head up the pastoral ministry licensing team. And what are some other things that you would say to our church leaders, our pastors, in this way of developing young leaders that maybe they can't do a full-time internship or residency, but there, what are some other tips or things you could say to them to encourage them in the way they raise up young leaders and towards the pastorate?
The number one piece of advice I would give people is to pray diligently. Jesus told us a long time ago that the harvest is white. You know, the field's white to harvest. Yeah. And there was a need. There's always been a need for more workers. And the solution was, well, pray the Lord of the harvest would send out workers. You know, whether or not you can have a residency, whether or not you're in a place that any of that can happen, everybody can pray. You know, if you're the church, if you're the pastor or leader of a church of 2,000, you can pray. If you're the pastor or leader of a church of two, you can pray. So that's something all of us can do. And honestly, I think it's the most important thing and most effective thing. Because if the Lord doesn't build the church, we're all just laboring in vain. I think I've read that somewhere. Mm. Big, thick book with a black cover.
Yeah.
So I would love the United Brethren Church to be people of prayer, that the Lord would raise up not only pastors, but Christian leaders and global workers. That would be the number one thing. The other thing that I would recommend to people is simply do some life speaking into people. I never imagined pastoral ministry. No one who knew me growing up ever saw pastoral ministry. I often tell people, I am the only one I've ever heard of to get kicked out of junior church. but that's my story. And yet Ray Selhammer saw something in me that I didn't see. And one day asked me, "Jim, is it possible that God's calling you to pastoral ministry?" I respected him far too much to laugh in his face, but I laughed underneath. I thought that was the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. And yet, you know, many years later, here I am talking to you about developing the next generation of ministers.
How about that? I've heard that about, I know Ray a little bit. We've had some conversations. We've met together a couple of times, but I've heard his name in this way from multiple people that Ray spoke life into them and called something out of them. So just the legacy of that he's leaving just by calling that out of people, I think is phenomenal. That's one of the things, honestly, that I loved about serving in youth ministry is working with young people who are trying to figure out who they are and trying to figure out who Jesus is and who Jesus made them to be, you know, and to be in a position where we can help them discover that, but then call out in them, you know, maybe this is something the Lord's calling you towards, whether that was pastoral ministry or something else. So I love that imagery of speaking life into people. Yeah. Jim, is there anything? I've got three questions that we always conclude these interviews with, but I want to give you an opportunity. If there's anything else that you would like to share from your seat as the pastor of Mount Pleasant or from your role as director of ministerial licensing or just as a brother in Christ that you would want to share with listeners in our denomination?
The answer I would give to that question is don't worry about what you can't do. Focus on what you can do. Hmm. You know, lots of us have limitations of all kinds, but we can all do something. So find out what that thing is and do that. Walk in the light that God gives you.
Love it. Love it. Good advice for any of us. Well, Jim, I've got three questions that hint at that. You know, I like to surprise people with these questions. They're not hard questions, but things that are probably near and dear to your heart already that you're already thinking about, and maybe one you've already answered today. So question one is, who is someone who's influenced you?
Ray Selhammer. Ray's known me since I'm a boy. When he was the president of Evangelical Seminary in Myerstown, my dad was on the board of trustees there. So Ray and Ruth were regular guests in our home, and he has been someone that has poured into me. And I've had the blessing of following him. He was in the interim role here at Mount Pleasant before me. And okay. So that would be the person that typically comes to mind first.
Yeah. All right. Good answer. Good answer. How about something you hope to accomplish this year? That could be personal or in your church or throughout the denomination. Something you hope to accomplish.
My primary goal at this point in my life is raising up the next generation. Yeah, I've come to a place of recognizing that I'm probably not going to come up with the next great idea. And so if I can encourage and open doors for young people to step into leadership, that, you know, in whatever, however many more years God gives me to serve, that's the primary thing I want to be doing.
Love it. Love it. And the last one, this is just, I think it's important to highlight in ministry is this idea of rest. We talk about, co-vocational leadership in our churches. And sometimes we can get to a point where we're tired and we're being ministry, burnout in ministry is huge. So, where is someplace you find rest?
The tradition for us is Bethany Beach. Our family gathers there every year, and I find that to be a very restful place. But honestly, you know, for me, it's not the once a year kind of a thing.
Yeah.
For me, it's much more the regular rhythm of practicing rest, of taking that weekly Sabbath day, of spending time daily in prayer, and making sure that I box out time for things that renew me. That for me is much more critical than those single, that big week during the year.
Yeah. Can you imagine? It made me think, can you imagine if we only filled our gas tanks in our cars, you know, once a year? You know, we've got to do that for me sometimes twice a week to have the fuel and the energy and the power to keep going. And so I do think those weekly and daily times are valuable for us emotionally, spiritually, physically, all around. So
it was game changing when I finally realized that Sabbath was a gift, not something I had to do for God. That it was actually a gift to me. We have the owner's manual of how to not burn out.
Right.
you can choose to follow the instructions or not. I figured out a long time ago that God probably knows something about us that caused him to say, hey, take one day and step away from the ordinary stuff and recharge. It's up to us whether we take his advice or not.
Yeah, right on. And I imagine, not to bring this full circle, but guess maybe to bring this full circle is that that's probably a pretty significant piece of this pastoral residency to train up leaders to understand the need for rest, to be in the ministry for the long haul.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Jim, thanks for this interview. This has been fun for me. It's been fun getting to know you the last several months as I stepped onto the team at the national office. So I look forward to many more conversations like this on air or off air. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Brian.